Randy Walton out.
Randy is joining us via Zoom today because he was not feeling well, and I'm not sure, is he on now, Stephen?
He's not on there yet, no.
He wasn't sure he was going to make it back from the fire.
Randy, are you on, are you there?
Hold on.
All muted.
Did not have something else.
That's Rita, Rita AI.
Okay, nope, he's not there.
Okay.
I'll keep you posted.
We're at 3 o'clock.
Okay, it's 3 o'clock, let's call this meeting to order. May 20th, here at the Overton Building. And Mr. Chad Levitt will lead us the pledge.
Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Any public comments?
We do have one here in the seat.
Okay, you have 3 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, hi gang, it's Gary Elford. Good to see all of you, or sort of see all of you. Kind of a simple question today, and I guess you can decide whether or not it's appropriate for you to answer. But you're hearing me okay, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. I was looking through the packet, and I noticed that somehow in this month we lost a net of 35 customers. And I was just wondering how something like that happens. Is it people bailing out of apartments, or is it businesses closing, or what? It's just kind of weird to me that we could lose, I don't understand how we lose customers. I guess apartments would be the one thing that made any sense to me, but I'd be glad if someone had an answer.
Okay. Can I answer, Mr.
Certainly,
Chair?
Certainly, that would be great.
Hi, Gary, this is me, Lisa.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good, good.
I would say that there's a couple of things that we do see when we see large changes like that. First and foremost is snowbirds leaving. And then the other thing, it is actually apartment complexes. Oftentimes what we see is that people will leave and move from one apartment, especially when snowbirds leave and items open up. They leave on the 30th and then they reconnect on the 1st, the next day in a new place. And so sometimes you see that ebb and flow there. Very rarely do we fully lose customers, with the exception of when we see the pickup for the snowbirds and then when they leave.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, any others?
No, thank you.
We're looking for a motion to accept the agenda.
I'll move we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion to second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, exciting time. Mr. Dale Ross, would you?
Can we come over this way, Jack,
sure.
So it's in the light? Mr. West.
Mr. Dale.
We didn't do the minutes yet.
What? He's getting something?
We gotta. Okay, we'll just do this and then we'll go back. How about that?
Does he have a certificate? Jack has it.
You skipped an item.
Okay, we'll go back and get it, whatever it was.
Is it right here? Or?
No.
How about. Okay, this way?
Yeah. Because otherwise it's
easy. We look good from the door.
That or in front of the flag?
You get to keep the pen, but you can't keep the certificate. How about that?
So, award you for your hard work and filling all those classes and sitting there for 8 hours.
Sure.
No,
I learned a lot.
Congratulations.
Okay.
Yeah, for about 2 solid hours last night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you.
And go back to E.
Okay. Our attorney says I missed item E, approval of the previous agenda, looking for a motion.
Well, the minutes, you're approving the minutes from the prior board meeting.
The minutes of the prior meeting.
I move we approve the minutes of the prior meeting.
Okay, looking for a second.
I second that.
Okay, we've got a motion to second, everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Randy Lobb, did you ever come on?
I haven't seen him.
Not yet.
Well, I can vouch that he is one sick Jose. It comes clear from the lungs. Oh, man. So because of that, Dale Russ and I filled in his slot, put the awards out last night.
Thank you for doing that. I saw your guys' pictures. I know that's a long night, but you leave there with your heart happy when you see those amazing young kids.
It was a long one.
Yes.
2 hours, you know, we made it. Vernon was there to keep us propped up, so he was all good.
Very good.
And he was sitting right over in amongst it. Just rode back to the mayor. And
that's right.
Oh, man. So yep. Two of these.
That's just one thank you.
Oh, the other is just a thank you from Michaela Brooks.
That's her announcement, and that is a thank you
and
that she sent.
The little card that goes, thank you, OPD, for giving me the scholarship. I'm so grateful. Thank you much, Michaela Brooks.
Very good.
Her dad is a metro guy that flies the helicopter at night there with a big spotlight. Oh. So you don't want to get on his bad side.
No.
So everybody be nice to Michaela.
her time's about over. So awards tonight with Moapa Valley, and then the next Monday following that Friday was the VV one. And Dale and I filled in, but it was Melissa called it. I mean, you realize that our country's in good hands and we got solid
yes.
kids.
Yeah.
So many smart kids. It's amazing. The one kid, Dr. 47, is going to be a nuclear scientist.
Wow.
And the little Philippine guy was going to be some kind of a doctor. I can't even remember. But
a couple of nurses.
Yeah. Yeah. So, very good. Very good. All right, Mr. Attorney.
Mr. Chairman, I have nothing to report specifically unless anyone has any questions for me at this time.
Okay, all good then. Thank you, sir. All right, Melissa.
Okay, let's go through the managers. Kyle will start us out.
All righty. Okay, line operations report for the month of May. Start with safety. Safety meeting was held April 23rd here in this Overton boardroom. ESCI was on site to give that training. We led off with a good discussion with staff. Omar Vallejo was able to give the utility corner is what he's created, and the safety committee is sharing that around. It's a little bit of an in-house presentation before the ESCI. Omar kicked it off last month with HIT transformers. So we have pad mount transformers all around the subdivisions, around in front of your house possibly. But it's alarming how many throughout the year get bumped by traffic, just someone pulling in their driveway, backing a trailer in their driveway. And the safety practices that our teams have to do when repairing those, but also it gave like a scenario basis for the office staff. They can walk those customers through that.
Does so, it always kick the power off when it happens?
Rarely does it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there'll be many a times that it happens and no one calls it in. And until we do an inspection and a line patrol through that area, do you realize, hey, this thing has been spun. Yeah, they've had it spun all the way around backwards. Yeah. So we had a great training that last month in closed space, vault rescue and ladder safety. 50 employees in attendance. The enclosed space and vault rescue is a big one that we've put a lot of effort into in the last year and a half, bought a lot of tooling, a lot of training, and I'm just proud of the staff and proud of Overton Power for the positive direction we're going with that. outage report for the month of April, we had 4 unplanned outages and then 16 planned outages. So a lot of planned outages, which is exciting for me to see. That shows you that our inspection process, the software that we use for that, is then getting translated to the staking department that's creating the work orders. From there, it's going on to the staff to schedule and change out those transformers, change out those secondary vaults. It's a lot of workload that we got through the last month, and it really is exciting.
When you have I see one of them that there's over 200 customers. So you notify the customers ahead of time so they know you're coming in and going to do
absolutely
the work and everything.
Yep. The line foreman schedules it. We have a process through Christy at the front desk. She sends out the notifications. Yeah, we have a very solid process for that alarms all of those customers. Yep.
Notify ahead of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. At least 48 hours is what we try to do. Yeah. Unless it's emergency, then obviously it's different.
Or unplanned.
Yeah, or unplanned, exactly. Okay. For the unplanned outages, the big one is the line item number 9. That was April 17th. You'll remember the switch fire. I think there's a lot of Facebook posts over there in Mesquite around the Smiths area. Some brush caught on fire there. And quite honestly, that morning started early for Zach Layton and the substation crew. They had a power blip on that particular circuit, and they started early that morning going through all that underground, checking every site, looking. Their focus was thinking it was going to be another rodent. We've had a lot of rodents in those underground facilities. They worked through that for hours, tracking down every different site until they found a switch that had been bumped, like I just described with the transformers, and it had caused that momentary blip in the power. Right after they got that repaired, there's a fire happen, fire trucks, cars are happening across the way from them over there. They go up on that scene, and there's just so many emergency personnel around there trying to see into the area and make a good determination on what they should do. They chose to open that circuit at the substation just for the safety of all the personnel that was there. So there's a lot of customers that went out that day, 652 customers. A lot of those were commercial customers. That included Smith's, that entire strip mall area around Carl's Jr. and that. And that's a big responsibility for that staff to make that call with little information. But I think they, you know, knowing what they knew and what they could see, they made the right call in order to keep it safe. A couple other small unplanned outages, but then the bottom one, poor guy up the road right here was installing a tree and dug through his service. So didn't remember to call in before he did so. And
those ones hurt.
That hurts, exactly. Oh. It does hurt. Service installations for the month of April, we had 28 residential connects. All in the Pulte homes up in the northwest section of Mesquite, Canyon Crest, Dinosaur, and Falcon sub. That brings our total for the year up to 115. 4 of us were able to attend the NRECA Safety Summit in St. Louis, middle of April. It's an incredible event. It's the pinnacle of utility safety events to go to. So many other utilities, co-ops like us, send their staff to that to network, to gain skills, to try and better their safety program, just like we were trying to do when we went there. So myself, Luke Whitney from the engineering department, Steve Barlow, and Shane Levitt from line ops department went back there and spent 3 days at this training. It was, like I said, it was an incredible event. We had a meeting beforehand, created some goals of what we were going to accomplish. 480 volt arc flash practices is one we're right in the middle of making some changes there. So we were able to go back to that event and network, ask questions. It's funny, that event, there was 1,300 people at it. But yet when they planned that event 3 years ago, they planned 3 years in advance, they only expected 600 people to be there. So you put 1,300 people inside of a venue that's made for 600 people, you are literally touching the guy next. There's no way you could be a wallflower at that event, and you couldn't get away from people. So
he speaks from experience.
I was the professional being a wallflower, but there you couldn't get away from people. So there was a lot of good conversation, a lot of amazing trainings there at that event. For the jobs that happened in the last month, you see on the far right, that's the switch fire that Zach and Layton were able to determine it and help with Dave Everett making that call to de-energize. It looks minimal in that picture, but for reference, like there's just so many people around that and you can't see back in there to see what it was.
But it was truly actually the cable box,
it was,
right? It wasn't,
yes.
Our switch was not on fire.
But they were looking through a wall of flames, and we know there's a switch back behind there. We don't know the damage. They don't know what's actually on fire. And then they also have all this fire personnel that's rolling out hoses, not listening to them. Like, they made the right call.
So it wasn't the electric that caused the fire?
No.
Do they know what did?
Well, I think, if I remember right, it's a communications or a cable TV underground vault right there, and not sure if someone started a fire in there or it started a fire in there. That essentially it was inside that vault, right?
Okay,
in that.
Not us.
Not us. Nope.
You know, it seems kind of odd to spray water on a potentially electrical fire.
Yes. We have trainings, and we have more trainings planned with our EMS personnel, but I think, okay, so they have how many potential electrical fires per year, but they have 99% of them are emergencies. They got to get water on it as fast. They're not to do with electrical, so keeping their staff trained and think of the electrical possibility for every fire, it doesn't always get remembered. So, yeah, it's a great one to follow up with them, and we hope to continually keep having those trainings so that it just becomes second nature for them to take pause and give it a chance before they start spraying water on it. Absolutely. Oh. Absolutely.
So they know what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, a kind way of saying it, right? Mesquite also had three big paying jobs that they wrapped up this last month. Two subdivisions, hundreds of houses up in the Pulte Homes area, up on that northwest corner. Adobe Mesa and Dancing Boot. Oh, I'm sorry. Hidden Hills and Dancing Boot. And then they also had a commercial complex, Adobe Mesa, they just wrapped up in the last couple weeks. So they're at Falcon Ridge and Pioneer. Overton had their own fire April 20th. Not really sure what started it, how it started, but it briefly kind of charred the pole there. Didn't cause any necessarily damage. It was high winds, moving fast, blew through, and was put out really quickly. So you can see that flag over that cop car is just hard left. It is blowing that day. And then on the right and the center, you can see those practices we talked about, the vault rescue. You can see those gentlemen wearing those harnesses, using that shoring. You can't quite tell it there, but they have their rigging. It's right there between them against that wall that's ready for them there. If someone happens to go down, they have their harness on, they clip it on, and they can pull them out of the hole quickly. So pretty exciting. It's not the funnest. Up until a couple years ago, that was just maybe something that we heard about, but Overton Power's practicing it. We're doing very good with it. So, lastly, we had a storm on Sunday night. If you were here in town, you couldn't miss it, right? We had this pole blow down on the Glendale area, was out of power for a few hours. This is the pole that went down because of it right there along the freeway. Because of that storm, we also had a couple of phases on the pole tops that had either untied or broke free from the pole and floated out that they found the next day in line patrols. And we also found in our line patrols on Monday morning energized phase down at Stewart's Point, an energized phase that was laying on the ground energized. So it is a possibility with our soils, with the dry air that we have, those phases can lay on the ground energized and become a huge risk for public. So glad we put that effort into line patrolling that next morning and traveling our system trying to find all these.
I want to just add one piece to that. So we got the text that there was 78 customers out. We knew that it was likely, we could see that it was in the Moapa area or Glendale area. And almost immediately, the management group text received a message from Kyle that said, the crew has been dispatched. They're rolling a Digger Derrick. And they've called in extra staff because they know that likely in this kind of windstorm, we're going to find a broken pole. So I want to just say kudos to the crew. They know that when they're headed to the Moapa area, they're going to need more help because there's more ground to cover. But also the efficiency of not having to now go back and get a truck and load a pole. They're trying to be proactive. And sure enough, they found a pole. So very good job for the crew on thinking ahead and being prepared.
That's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Okay, thank you. Next up, we got Randall with engineering.
Thank you, Melissa. So this is the three poles inside Torta substation. That's the beginning of the new line. And those have been installed. In fact, they started pulling. I'll show a picture later on where they started pulling conductor in from the structure going on out to structure 9. The contractor's a little behind schedule. Their drilling machine was broke down for several days a couple weeks ago. So they're a little behind, but they got all the poles are set now in the ground. All the anchors are set. So they'll just spend the next 5-6 weeks just pulling in conductors and OPGW.
I thought originally they were supposed to be done in March or something, no?
May. I might have said March a year ago, but I would have spoken. May is now. Now it's going to be June.
Okay.
June is the
so
day.
So now it's June, right?
Yeah, but I'm not going to be here in June, so if it's not in June, you'll have to ask the guy that's going to be here. Why? It's
going to
be June.
We can't blame you?
No. It's going to be. Anyway, this is Tortoise and the... Oh, that stupid thing. Right in there, that's the three poles that I just showed you going on that new line going out. This is the contractor starting with the three pole that they installed inside Tortoise going out on the line, 1 through 9. So we have three locations now between 1 and 9, or 1 and 20 poles, that have cultural or historic sites, meaning we have to add people to go out there and monitor. So this is a couple examples of what they think this guy found. So he's holding this rock that's been chipped off. Anybody guess what it is?
A knife.
Nope. Maybe an arrowhead. So they chipped the stone to see if it flakes off easy so they can make an arrowhead out of it. So they're thinking Indians were there camped or whatever. So this backed up their theory because these here are a campsite, supposedly, from whenever. And I didn't even know if Indians made rock fire pits back in the day. But that's what they found. So we're paying about $2,500 a day to have this guy make sure that we don't disturb the cultural historic sites.
Yeah. Do they want any volunteers to go work there? I
didn't
know if not volunteers.
No. Paid staff.
You have to have a bachelor's degree in environmental science or something to go do that. They're all educated, well educated.
Well, we might be too.
You could be. So on our WEC update, so we've submitted 80% now of all of the standards that we've been asked to do. We submitted our implementation plan over a month ago, and we still haven't gotten word back if it's been accepted. I imagine it will be, but they still haven't given us any feedback on that or any of the standards that we've submitted to date. We've got no feedback on that, whether they're good, whether there's some corrections need to be made. So we're just waiting to see what happens.
And is this normal?
Well, it's been 12 years since we've been back in NERC, but they're saying it's normal because right now they're trying to pull in as many utilities as possible into this, and they're in WEC compliance. So they have a bunch of people adding things. And their staff is the same. They're talking about adding people, but who knows? So here's the chart of our completed requirements. We're about 85% complete, and we will definitely be done by the end of the year. And that's what our implementation plan asked for, is that we'd be done by December. And we'll definitely be able to have that accomplished. The guys that are working, Stephen, Eldon, Shane, on the compliance have been doing a wonderful job. And Eldon has transformed from a mechanical engineer to electrical engineer really quick in the last 6 months. That's all I have. There's any questions?
Question? What do you do with like hawks building nests in other poles? Do you just not worry about it, or do you call them?
This is being recorded.
I'll turn it over to Kyle. I know what Rich used to do, but
This is being recorded.
There's a lot of utilities. When we go to best practices, a lot of utilities that put a lot of focus in that. And that what they do during the off season, not the nesting season, they go up there and they remove the branches from the poles. And it's interesting. We don't have a lot of problem with that. It's interesting to learn from them. They say you can't just drop the branches at the bottom of the pole. You can't just chuck them off the pole. You got to take them miles away, because otherwise those birds will just pick them back up, put them back in the air. So
there's just a nest where I was doing something that there's three little hawks, and the parent hawks are there, and they're up on the poles, and I'm just wondering, what we do about it.
Fish and Wildlife has guidelines out for that, and we cannot.
We wish them well. We hope they survive.
We can't do anything right now during the nesting season. If it was on our system.
Those are new guidelines, right? That we didn't have like 10 or 15 years ago.
No, we always have an active nest with eggs, or you can't disturb it. But once it's abandoned, it can be disturbed.
Exactly, yep.
Okay, well, I would offer help.
In a few months. Perfect. Thank you very much, Randall. Shane with SubOps.
Yeah, we'll start with an update on Long Drive Switchyard. We've completed our apparatus testing in there. That's a pretty rigorous, thorough process that we go through with testing all the electrical equipment in there. There's 208 components, individual components, that amounted to almost 500 electrical tests that we had to run in there. We do everything we can to ensure that we can operate that equipment safely and reliably when we energize it. We're about 90% on our commissioning process. We actually energized the switchyard today, and we began our in-service checks. It'll take us through, hopefully by the end of next week, we will have that station fully in service. Painted Hills Bay 4, hopefully this is the last update you'll get from Painted Hills for a while. We put this in service, and it's now serving loads since May 7th. We did a very thorough job in testing all the equipment in there. It was the substation bay that moved from Arrowhead, so it had been in service, but the risk of moving that equipment and jarring something, we went through and electrically tested everything and ensured that it was good to be energized.
I'm going to interrupt this really quick. I want to commend Shane and his crew. They had a extremely short timeline to get that equipment moved and online before summer hit, and you guys know that we had summer temps in March, and so the fact that they got that all completed and it is in service on May 7th is quite incredible. I'm very proud of that team for everything that they did.
Thank you. Kind of going into our summer months, this time of year we're always looking at all of our distribution circuits and how they're balanced, and we forecast our summer loads, and so we can ensure that everything is under our rated loads and that we can keep things balanced. The bottom graph is a trend line of the last 12 or 13 years of our annual load through the year, and you can see that from May to the middle of September, the increase in load in our system. So We go through and look at every circuit and make sure that everything's balanced and that we can get through the summer. And we've done that. We reconfigured some circuits, and we feel good about it. We think we'll be okay through the summer, but getting Raptor online will significantly help this. And Arrowhead, I think we're okay, but that'll help significantly when we can get that online.
I do have a question. The very top line looks to see is 2024, right?
2014.
It is?
Yeah, that was 2024.
Okay.
And it was, go ahead.
No, I was just trying to see the chart and see the timeline involved. And so where is our current one is what color?
It's brown, and it's kind of buried in there in the...
It's the large spike.
You see it spike in March.
And then down in April.
And then it goes down in April because we had that heat wave, and then you can kind of follow it.
It's all right. So it's that top one.
Yeah. Yep.
In February, March, or March end.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a significant heat wave. Obviously, temperature drives the majority of our loads. So.
Okay.
Yeah, we use remote. We'll monitor real time with our SCADA system. We also have remote alarms on all of our feeders, so we'll get notifications if something's getting near overloaded, and we'll look at reconfiguring it.
Okay.
The top picture is just kind of a layout of our distribution circuits. Each circuit's a different color. It's kind of a, that's a part of Mesquite. Like the picture's missing, but we held a, or we hosted a Clara, our metering vendor and provider. They sent some engineers out last week to our Mesquite boardroom, and we hosted a couple other utilities. And they presented a new software that they're rolling out that helps with topology correction and advanced load analysis, fault location detection, things like that. And we're always looking at software and the new technology coming down the pipeline that we can improve in those areas. And we try to do everything we can to utilize the technology we do have and the data we have. And this software is able to utilize the existing metering system and the existing data we have. And so we're kind of excited on about it. We're keeping tabs on it and looking at all the options that we have to improve in those areas. And there's the picture. That's all I have, unless you have any questions.
The Clara meters are holding up?
Yeah, we've had pretty good success with them. We rolled out the RF system, and things have gone pretty well with it. So,
what is Raptor's status? Is it going to be the fall before it comes on? Or?
No, we're going to move from Long Drive. We'll move right into Raptor. We have the apparatus testing to do in there. The relay testing's complete, and all the construction's complete. Okay. So we have to get our distribution underground, our switches and cable set in there, so the crews will move into that over the next month or two. So we're hoping by middle of summer.
Midsummer, it should be up and running.
Yep.
Will that pick up some of the Mesquite load that Arrowhead would be handling?
It'll help. it'll help. We'll be able to take some load off Falcon Ridge and Dinosaur, and we'll push that across the freeway to pick up some of that load.
Thank you, Shane. Scott, with
the
admin.
All right, let's do it. Cybersecurity reports, pretty run-of-the-mill, nothing too out of the ordinary. And if you have any questions, let me know. Now let's get into it. Okay, 100% cybersecurity training, last 2 months since I made that brief comment in board meeting. It seemed to work, so. Everybody is doing their training, or we're fudging the numbers. I don't know, Stephen. Are they doing their training? Okay, everyone's doing the training. And we've had some really good training lately. Social engineering starts small. They talked about fake calendar invites and how that can lead to a breach.
Yes.
Something that you really don't think about, but you're dealing with links, travel plans. Like, we live and die by the calendar here at OPD. We put everything in that thing. So. That can definitely be something that can cause a breach. IT and operational systems must be separated. Good training. This is something that Steven, myself, and Merlin have been working on, segmentation of our OT and our IT systems for, seems like, months. But we are getting closer. And then fast incident response matters. Quick detection, coordination, and isolation are critical to stopping attacks before they spread. Unfortunately, we did have a couple employees click on emails this month. I will say that the employees that did that are very new employees. They're young here at OPD. They've only been here for a year or two. So they get a pass. But they are going to do a lot of extra training because of that. So, we saw 38,000 email in April. 4,600 of those were spam. A new little metric here is we sent 4,334 email outgoing. And I'll just keep that tally going as the months go on. Firewall blocks by country, United Kingdom, Netherlands, Germany.
Wasn't that Great Britain? Wasn't that Britain?
Yeah.
I thought they were gals. thought they were friends.
Our server system uptime remains at 100% across the board. Our data backup and restoration is complete for the month of May, and it's been tested. We continue to participate in the EI stack. I continue to look at those emails as they come through. We saw 109 emails come through in April. And the top three patterns was phishing and impersonation attacks, exploiting software weakness, and an increase or a rise in theft and vandalism to the utility infrastructure around the country. And if there's no questions for me, I'm going to turn the time over to Vernon for a little bit to talk about the NRECA consortium.
I was asked to just give you an update on some flash grant writing activity that took place in the last month or so. We, after waiting more than a year for any grant opportunities, federal grant opportunities to open up, all of a sudden one did. And the Department of Energy announced back in mid-March that about $1.9 billion of grant funding would be made available through the Grid Resilience and Innovation Partnership Program, GRIP program, which had been set aside by Congress a couple of years ago, but it was just kind of being held in check for a while. The timeline for the grant was pretty brief. It was focused, the grant was focused on reconductoring or adding new advanced transmission technology to existing lines. So we get kind of a big bang for our buck. We'd have existing right-of-ways, existing structures, and we'd be putting new conductor on that to increase capacity. They wanted a concept paper summary by April 2nd. Remember, they let us know this on the middle of March. And a full application was due by today, May 20th. The grants team at NRECA sent out an email asking all the entities who would be interested in going that money as a consortium. I worked with Randall, who helped out quite a bit in terms of trying to identify a project that we had that would fit within that, and we did have one on the capital improvements list to reconductor the old 69 line across the Mesa. With existing structures there, we put new conductor on it. So we put that in, a brief summary to them, and we were chosen among about a dozen or so other entities to be part of that consortium across nationwide. And then the fun really started. So they had to get a concept paper done within about a week and a half. We provided some more detail to them. They got that in, and then it was kind of a waiting game to see if the Department of Energy would send an encouragement to us that we should continue our application, the full application. That didn't come right away, so NRECA folks said, let's fill out the stuff because we got to have it done. So we started working on the paperwork. There was quite a lot, and so it took probably a couple solid weeks of work to get all the stuff put together. There was a full budget that we had to put together. Like I say, Randall was a big help in all that. He was patient with me because I was bugging him for a week or so on that stuff. We got all that in on time. I got a note back from that group, the consortium group, this morning that it has been submitted. And they expressed optimism that we're as good as any that could win that award. So hopefully we'll be hearing from them. The amount was $6 million with a 25% match on it. So.
Wow, it's a good thing
to
have a good grant writer. Nice work.
Well, we'll see, huh?
Right on. Not yet. Good news.
We did our best, though.
Good news is he's used to working nights on the paper years
That's
ago,
right?
Right?
That's right. Long hours.
That's great, though.
In that, you know, I think that Vernon is humble in the amount of work that he has had to put in, the time that he has spent, and his expertise is absolutely incredible. On top of the fact that Randall is taking on WETT compliance. He has multi-million dollar projects that are going on, and he came up with the idea that, you know, we could reconductor the 69 line. That would fit within that, and then come up with a budget. Randall has also been burning the midnight oil on that project. So both of those men have done an incredible job. And if we don't get the grant, it is not for lack of trying. They've worked very, very hard, and we'll try for the next one. In addition to working on the NRECA consortium, he's also, Vernon's also been in contact with Catherine Cortez Masto's office for appropriations for a couple of other projects. And so he is very busy with grant writing. And then somehow he still finds the time to put together some pretty incredible Facebook posts for our community. So these guys have done a very, very good job.
And doing that?
No, Vernon. No.
Thanks, Jack, for thinking that. Good. No.
So I want to say thank you to both of them, because I would love for us to get $6 million in grants for us to reconductor that line. And I agree with Vernon. We have as much chance as anybody else because of the quality work that he submitted.
You know, it is incredible, though, that we, as an organization, stepped up, that we are in play for some of these things, where before everybody else was getting stuff, and we had some very good projects to put in there, and it's wonderful that we are now finally doing that.
I believe there are, I think it's approximately 900 members of NRECA, and did you say there's 12 that made the...
Yeah, I think there's 14 total.
So... Pretty
I mean,
great.
We're a relatively small agency compared to a lot of those.
Oh, for sure.
And here we're playing in the big game. Yeah. That's wonderful. Really.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, next up is Jonathan with the finances.
All right, thank you, Melissa. We'll start with the statement of operations there on the far left, far right column, column B, the operating revenue and patronage capital. We're glad to report we had $4.5 million in revenues for the month of April. Our cost of purchase power on the next highlighted line was $2.1 million. And we actually had, we had budgeted close to that amount in our cost of purchase power. But I don't know, as a reminder, every month we are exceeding our budgeted amount because of the station power that we brought on. It's around $200,000 in revenue and around that in cost of purchase power also.
Thank you, Melissa.
So, yeah, all thanks to Melissa. And so, but this month with our cost of purchase power, that's what we were anticipating. But really it should have been bumped up around $200,000. But we had favorable hydro for March or for April, and also favorable solar for April. So our cost, one, we had increased hydro, and also with the increased hydro, Tenasco was able to optimize that hydro, and we were able to receive some substantial savings from that. So our cost of purchase power was greatly reduced from what we had budgeted. So that's a big factor in what we budgeted for a cost there. Also, we had more revenues than we budgeted for in April. With we had some larger jobs closed, and so our revenues were higher than what we budgeted. So then down towards the bottom, total cost of electric service $3.5 million, and then our line 22 operating or non-operating margins. Our interest received on investments was $38,000. And leads us to a total of just over $1 million in revenues or in margins for April. So we had actually budgeted for $300,000. And so with the decreased cost in power and the increased revenue, we're up above that by almost $700,000. We actually did have some reduced costs in our operating expenses too. But the main factor for the increased revenue and the decreased cost and purchase power. So our column B, year-to-date margins were $2.6 million, And at this time last year, we're at 600,000, so we are grateful that we're quite a bit above what we were last year. Mm-hmm. And in our margins, mostly due to this month, but our budgeted margins as opposed to our actual are almost 1.4 million, right about 1.4 million more than the budget. So we're pleased to report that. So
the extra hydro that we got, is that something that could continue, or is it just a 1 month blip?
And my understanding, it was a 1 month.
It's our most favorable month.
Yeah, March is always really good.
So one of the things that Tenasca, and correct me, but don't quote me on the exact numbers, but we had excess capacity that we could sell off, and they sold that at, I want to say, $94. And then they came back and said, we have excess energy if you want to buy it. And Tenasca then went back and bought it for $34. So they said, you guys have a net margin on that of about $15,000, that they worked that out. So, and that's Garrett is our scheduler, and he does that optimization for us. And he said, is that okay? And I'm like, thank you. Yes. Don't ask next time. Just click yes before they change their mind. So.
So on to the balance sheet. Our balance sheet will start on the asset side on line 5. We have a net utility plant value of $169 million. We have our line 8 investment in associated organizations, line 15 cash, line 18 temporary investments. So we've asked before those, that's where our cash and investments reserve, if you add those two together. So we're just under $10 million there for this month at the end of the month. Line 23, our materials and supplies, and then our total line 29 assets for OPD is $195 million. And line on the liability and equity side, our line 36 equities are $134 million. And then we have our long-term debt, just under $50 million. Accounts payable in line 48, and then again our liabilities and other equities, $195 million. Modified debt service coverage, this is estimates throughout the end of the year, 2.16. Our goal for this year is 1.87, so we're slightly above that because of our margins. I also wanted to report that not sure if next month that will change much, because our May, we projected that our May margins were going to be just a little bit of a loss of around 50,000. So don't shoot the messenger too bad next month, but I just want to give you a heads up on that. So, but we'll see if we have another favorable month with reduced power costs. And then some of this, and we'll talk about this a little later in the borrowing discussion, but we reported TSC this month, 2.1 is our current amount. Goal is 1.1 or 1.81. Our equity is a percentage of assets, 68.91%, times interest earned ratio, 5.28. And our ending cash there in the middle, 3.2 million cash held in our checking accounts. So if you notice there in the middle, Meter instead of Morton. So Morton and Meter merged about a month ago, I think. And so Meter took over. They're the parent company. Meter was more of a national investment firm, and Meter was more of, or I'm sorry, Morton was more of a regional one. So left the Meter name. So we have all the same folks that we're working with at Morton, but merged with Meter. So you'll be seeing that from now on. So far, no real changes there. 5.6 million is where our Meter account is, and then our Goldman account is 854,000. Then the list here are security and our Meter account by security type and duration there. No real change from the prior month. And then our list of assets there. And we sorted those by maturity date as early as to the latest. Then OPD total customers, 19,253, so it's not always, but this is a net number, and as we discussed earlier, sometimes the number drops, but typically in the next month we jump up quite a bit more than typically is for that month.
I noticed in that graph that we lost last year about the same time.
Yeah. So yeah, it was the end of the year.
So it's not an unusual event necessarily. Right. It happens.
Right. So in our connection fees, we received $37 total connection fees valued at $70,000. So this is quite a bit more than our average connection fee amount there. We had one large commercial customer in Mesquite that was the driving force for all those. It was the electric vehicle station that is being installed there, and so that was a big.
Where's that being installed at, John?
It's on Mesquite Boulevard, and it's where the
old McDonald's.
McDonald's used to be.
Well, that'd be similar to like what's at Glendale.
Oh, yeah. About a megawatt, megawatt and a half. We have a 1,500 kVA there feeding it.
So in current billing arrangements, can you continue to drop for April? 3,000. Well, we had 25 residential customers, 3,688, and one commercial customer at $57.
$57?
Yes, sir. We work with everybody.
Perfect answer.
He's starting to sound like a salesman, isn't he?
There's got to be a minimum.
So our roundup program balances there, and our loan balances, the CFC, the detail there. $49 million. Our last payment was made in March, so no change there.
Doesn't go down much. We pay them $1.5 million and it hardly drops.
Sorry. We can talk about more about this and later. Yeah, no. We got some details. So. And then our revenue by customer class there, revenue in KWH per customer class. And then we have down here our averages down at the bottom. So our monthly cost, again, since we had the reduced costs that I mentioned earlier, we had 6.23 cents per kWh, monthly revenue, 12.76, and then our 26 average cost is 7.03 cents per kWh. So.
Good. Yeah.
And don't have any questions, that's all I have.
Recently, Melissa, you talked about it. We got the customer from Nevada Energy. How does that reflect in like our monthly revenue for something that was like $24,000 or something a month?
Do
you answer?
Okay, so the revenue is around $200,000, but the
month.
Yeah, but the margins are around $20,000.
Oh, okay.
So the costs are right up there with the
revenue. Okay. Our net.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you look here, I've included on the bottom line there.
Oh, new.
I started including these. So we have three here. We actually had one station customer in the past, and we just didn't have it listed there. But since we added the two last year, the one's quite significant, but we added the third this year. So that's their data there. So the total KWH and the total revenue.
Will you go to the next slide, please?
Yeah.
But on the monthly revenue and the monthly cost, that is not, because the large customer is on a different rate. And so that definitely skews what we report to you for our monthly revenue and our monthly costs. So Jonathan has excluded them.
Okay.
So that it doesn't It doesn't
so
reflect.
So we get apples compared to apples.
Yes, so that you get to see this is what 99.99% of our customers cost and what our revenue is from them. Those are such a unique customer that those are left out on that ratio.
Okay. Yeah, so those highlighted ratios, same thing with it, and also the total cents per kWh on the right there, I don't know if you can see it, but just right here, that has those customers backed out also.
Thank you, Jonathan.
You're going to want to turn that on and off real quick. It was controlling the mouse.
Mike asked me today in the lunchroom if this is still what my brain looks like, and I said after this week, absolutely. So this is a very fair assessment, and why I leave this is my opening for my report.
Well, hopefully you'll get a little more organized in your another couple of things.
I'm working on it, yes.
Same time of August.
Okay, so these are the meetings that I attended. I went with NREA and we presented at the Joint Interim Committee that is chaired by Howard Watts and it's vice chaired by Rochelle Wynn. And this time we talked on wildfires. So the key points that we made with them, number one was a liability cap on net non-economic damages. One of the things that we have seen in past wildfire, when people are suing, they have, what's it called, Byron, where you're pain and suffering, couldn't think of that. They have pain and suffering for hundreds of thousands of dollars because they've lost their cat. And I do believe that people are very sad over the loss of the cat, but that equates to incredible sums of money when it comes to litigation. And so one of the things that we're hoping for is that they would cap any non-economic damages. If your structure of your home is damaged or something like that, then of course that should be included. But the pain and suffering on other items, there has to be a cap. Otherwise, these lawsuits become billions of dollars. So we spoke on that. We talked about right-of-way clearing and permitting reform. The key differences of a not-for-profit and an IOU, NV Energy was also in the room to do a presentation on wildfire. And then we also highlighted that our ability to get insurance. Our current insurance is through Federated Rural Insurance. They are a cooperative themselves. Chairman Watts was very intrigued by that, the fact that co-ops stay with the co-op model in things like insurance that, again, is not-for-profit. We explained to them that just a few short years ago, they had insurance rewriters that they would go out and solicit, and they had about 24 to 27 that they could go to. They are down now in 2026. They had three that were willing to rewrite on wildfire. And so what we say is we're very near to the ability to not get insurance because of wildfires. Now, an investor-owned utility like NV Energy, if they have a catastrophic event like this, they have both investors and shareholders that they can go to. They are also owned by Berkshire Hathaway, and so they have different access to insurance than we do. And so it's very important that when the legislature is writing these bills, that they're keenly aware of the differences of us. So I thought it was very good. Rochelle Wynn was very informed on NV Energy, and she had a lot of questions for us, so it was very good. One of the things that I'll just share quickly, our executive director, I believe that we went there on a Tuesday, and she had her baby probably, we flew out to DC right after that, and she had the baby then, so she was just a few days before having her baby, and she was just huffing and puffing and miserable in the back of the room. I felt so sorry for her. And she ended up texting Chairman Watts and saying, I'm about to have this baby. move us up in the agenda, and bless his heart, he did.
Oh, wow.
And so she said, as poetic as it would be for us to have a Nevada baby here together today, I'd like to get through this performance and get home and get my feet up. And she did. I mean, once she got up there, she spoke like such a champ. She is an incredible representative for us, very, very well spoken. But just a few short days later, she did in fact have her baby. So kudos to her for going. One of the things that I wanted to show you from that I thought really spoke to the committee, I zoomed in on this because we showed the entire overlay of the U.S. And the on the right is the high likelihood or the danger areas for wildfire. And so when you show them the state of Nevada, and then you show them on the other screen an overlay of where NREA serves. So we serve less than 50% of the population in the state, but far less than that. But we serve over 50% of land mass in the state. And so they were very intrigued by that, asked to keep that map. And I just thought it was a really good representation. We had myself and Dane Bradfield from Lincoln County that spoke at the committee in Las Vegas. And then we had Kevin Robison and Ryan Broadshow went to Carson City. And so we had a very good showing there for that.
When you say we serve 50% of the land mass, just in a lot of the land mass is not served at all. Big percentage of Nevada land mass, that big white space in the middle, there is certainly Las Vegas and Carson City, and but the
white is NV Energy service territory.
Their entire service area?
Yeah.
They serve that?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing there.
There is. That's Elko, Urington, Fallon.
Tonopah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's pretty vacant, though, right?
Oh,
well, I'll say yes. Yeah.
Thank you. I feel better now.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. What else have I done in the last month? Jack and I attended the SSEA board meeting, and Jack was voted as the vice chair of SSEA. Jack got to sit through yet another audit report, and so he was thrilled about that. I'm very thankful for Jack and his expertise and the respect that they have for him, that they put him on their executive committee for the board.
What is SSEA?
So SSEA is a group that was formed with Lincoln County, Overton, Colorado River Commission, Boulder City, and SNWA. And so the initial arrangement was to help provide transmission, to work together on building transmission projects, and then also for procuring of power as a larger group.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Silver and State Energy Commission.
And aren't they helping us with APCO and that whole process, or is that not?
We're working with them, yes. We have three new station power customers that will be entering into our service territory, similar to the two. The Gemini project that we currently serve, that is our largest, they are adding to their project, and then we have two new. So I am working on drafting those contracts, and I will get those over to Byron for his review. A couple of those projects need agreements with us now. All of them are COD of 2029, but for their financing, they need agreements, written agreements with us. So when we bring those agreements to you, those will all be with indicative pricing, and then we will firm that pricing at the time when they, as it gets closer, and we can. But we will still be bringing you guys agreements that we will essentially send them a will serve that says, yes, we will serve your load. And we have been working with NV Energy on those projects as well. I had coffee with Tony Sanchez from NV Energy. I have met with him a couple of times because he has been at the committee hearings at the legislature and discussed for us to meet up. So I went in and met with him. We discussed industry growth, data centers. They have a new contact in their office that is all things data center. And so he introduced me to him. And We discussed self-serving loads, but one of the things that I'm really appreciative of creating this relationship with him, Tony actually shared with us their large load interconnect document. When you think of the legal staff that they have and the time and money that has went into that, and they just shared that freely with us, I think that that relationship is important for me to continue with, and so I'm very thankful of that. We're going to talk in executive session a little bit about some data centers, and I'll share some of the things that Tony and I visited about. Yesterday, I flew up to Reno and attended a meeting with the Governor's Office of Economic Development. We discussed tax abatements, incentives, guardrails for requirements for self-serve renewables, all on data centers. That was a 14.5-hour day, and I'm feeling it today. I'm turning 40 again this year, and I feel it. While I was driving home, I was counting, like, gosh, how many hours have I been working? And it came to me that Cody Hardy, who is our line foreman here, he got called out on Sunday in the middle of the night, and they worked through the night. So I started ticking off how many hours that he and his crew worked. And they worked 16.5 hours. And the wild difference is that my 14.5 hours were spent in an Uber and an airplane, in a meeting, in an Uber and an airplane. And Cody actually worked. So I don't feel sorry for myself anymore. but it was a long day. I will say that I got introduced into this group. It's kind of odd for me to be there. We have a local politician in Mesquite who asked me to join him in a meeting with the GOED team, and it's all economic development people from all over the state, and from rural districts and within Las Vegas. And so they were discussing data centers, and George wanted my opinion on data centers. So I attended that meeting with him. And they started talking about NV Energy, and so finally I had to raise my hand and remind them that there are 11 other entities in the state that serve power. I should have kept my mouth shut, because now they keep inviting me to their meetings. And so it's me with all of these RDA clerks, and then me from the power company. It was very interesting to hear their take on it, because they come from such a different lens when they're thinking of taxes and revenue for the state. That is something that our governor is very keen on right now. He's touting that very much on the campaign trail. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that following this meeting. But it was a good meeting. I think it's very, very important. Lisa also joined me remotely from NREA. And they felt like it was very important that we were in the room, and so do I. I think that these are the kinds of conversations, especially when you're talking about putting legislature before the governor on bills, that they need rural electric's input on such topics, especially when it comes to data centers. And so we had one guy that started talking about dirty energy. And I thought, oh gosh, here we go. I gave him a little bit of an education before I left on the difference between clean and dirty energy. Really, what he was actually talking about, he lives in Battle Mountain, is that they routinely have outages, and they have light flashes, voltage flickering, and so they call that dirty power. And so I said, this has nothing to do with environmental. But when we talk about data centers and they say that they want to have green energy, you have to remember that all of those data centers are also willing to be served by diesel generators for a period of time. And that is, in fact, dirty energy. And so it was good for us to be there. Yeah. Meridian is our accounting software. And one of the things that we have been talking about as a management group, we are on their very old accounting and billing software, and they have a new software that they are touting that's called Meridian. And so we've been looking at exploring moving to that new software. The cost of that is significant to do that upgrade. And so we also said, well, let's look at the other mainstream, main industry competitor, which is NISC, and see what would the cost be to transition to them. What does their software look like? So we put together a committee and started to have a kickoff meeting with Meridian, and this last week we received a notice from Meridian that they are merging with NISC. And so it's going to be one entity. And so Jonathan is leading up that committee, and so we're going to be working closely with Meridian to see how that transition is going to go. They are actually going to use the NISC software, and so with compliments from the Meridian software. And so that's still very, very new news, and we'll keep you guys up to date on that and what cost implications that could mean.
Well, he says, is that because, one, we need to overall have a better software solution, or is it we have a situation where all of a sudden our software is no longer supported and we had to go find a new system?
It's still supported.
We don't have a choice.
Do you remember, Scott, what year we moved from Reflections to UPN?
2008, maybe? 2007?
I was thinking, it's 20-year-old software, and sure. So it's just become antiquated. And they've had new software for, I think it's probably been available since 2020, 2021, and we haven't moved to it. That was one of the things that Mendes wanted to do, have complete before he left, and I pumped the brakes on that because we had a very junior finance staff, and so I did not want to go through that transition at that time. And I'm really hoping that paid off for us, because the cost to do that transition is about $250,000, and so we may have avoided that. So.
And you've got options rather than just sticking with the same company.
Yeah. Operating. Yeah. Tomorrow, Escape Solar is doing some NERC required testing. They are federally required to do that testing, and we are contractually obligated to allow that testing to happen. And so Shane, if anything happens, it's all on his shoulders to ensure that we notify them immediately.
Did Kevin Hansen give it up?
He took vacation on purpose. Yes, no, I'm just teasing. I'm just teasing.
Shane assassinated him.
But in all seriousness, Shane is working very closely with Lincoln County Power. He will be, Lincoln County will have people on site, and then we will be on the phone with them and NovaSource, who is handling the testing. And so we will be monitoring that very closely. If there is any issues, they will not last long. Shane will order a full disconnect immediately. But I just want to give you guys those warnings that they are required to do that testing, and we are obligated to allow that testing to happen.
Do you know what time it's happening?
8:30.
It's supposed to start at 8:30, and it's supposed to be done by 12:30. They're hoping that they will be done far sooner. History has shown that they very rarely start on time, and it's very rarely without issue. So,
you guys got pumps going?
Yeah,
to turn them off.
Good thinking.
We had gotten our own testing equipment. Is that still
so? What we got?
Available and working?
What we got was monitoring. We got monitoring equipment, and yes, that is still all available. That just tells us when did it start and what happened, but. But as far as testing, that's 100% on their equipment, and that is coordinated through Lincoln County. But because of our close relationship with Lincoln County, we're being included in all of that.
But the monitoring allows us to be able to say, this isn't our system causing this, this is your system.
When it started and what happened, yes. Yeah. And we freely share that information back with them so that they can do corrections and work on that.
Is there any need to notify our large commercial contractors?
We did that today, yes. CRETA, the Colorado River Electrification Group, hired a new executive director. His name is Andy Colosimo. He has done government affairs for the Colorado Springs utility since 2002, very well respected in the water and power industry and legislatively, and that transition will begin on June 1st. Leslie will be retiring in June. So
Think you'll be able to stop the cold bath for the bypass bid?
We're going to talk about that in a few minutes, Jack. I will just remind you guys that we do have a Creedom meeting in June, and Randall will be in attendance of that meeting, so that you'll see that he is gone from board meeting because of the overlap of that meeting. But we do feel with the hydrology and the issues on the Colorado River that it is important that we are in attendance, and so Randall will be doing that for us. The last thing that I want to report was that NV Energy had a substation breach. One of their rural substations, because of our relationship with an NV Energy employee, we were made aware of that breach. And so because of WEC and NERC compliance, much of that information is not shareable, but we were warned that that happened. And so I also received warning from the Department of Homeland Security, reached out to me as well. So just to let you guys know, we then spoke with our Metro here and made them aware of it, as well as Shane and Kevin reviewed cameras at our rural substations here, and then we did have guys go on site and monitor to see if any of ours had been breached too. One of the things that we are seeing as we monitor the EISAC that Scott talks about, and just as I go to industry meetings, is that rural substations are getting hit more and more, and people are more keenly aware of important and key substations, and so that security is becoming more and more necessary.
Strictly for terrorism or other purpose?
I don't know that this is terrorism. I think that some of it is still just good old-fashioned theft, but they are now more aware of where substations are, what's involved in them, and you know what they can and can't get. So the substation that was breached, I don't know much about, but I believe it has a 20-foot block wall around.
Huge.
Wow.
And they have incredible security, and it was, in fact, breached. So, okay, that concludes my report, unless you guys have any questions for me.
I'd like to welcome Mr. Lynn Sedale to the meeting. He will be taking my chair here coming up soon. And also last night I met the other that's taking Bob Bunker's place, Mike Levitt. And wow, what a nice guy. I tried to get him to come up and let me introduce him as we gave out the scholarships. He soundly refused.
He'll fit right in.
For real, he will. He's a nice guy. Discussion on debt structuring for discussion only.
So you guys know that nothing makes me more happy than to talk about people or data on investing in debt. So it is painful for me to turn this over to Jonathan. But I have the utmost faith in him, and I have went over this program with him, and he's far better than me. So I'm going to let Jonathan take it away.
Okay. Plus, he's dressed pretty slick.
I'm telling you.
All righty. So to get started with, we just had our $36 million pre-approval with CSC, and we wanted to talk a little bit about the debt structuring strategy that we're trying to accomplish here at OPD5. And basically it's three things that we're trying to accomplish. We want to make sure that we are financially stable, we want to make sure that our infrastructure is reliable, and we want to keep our rates reasonably low for our customers. So with that, there's a lot that goes into making decisions about when we borrow and how much and for how long. And we wanted to discuss that since there was quite a bit of questions last month when we talked about our pre-approval for this $36 million, which again, is the pre-approval for it. And we have to seek approval from the board for when we do borrowings. So to begin with, One of the external things that drives our decisions is the interest rate. And this is just a summary of where the Fed interest rate is right now. So if you look back 2 years ago in May of 2024, the federal funds target rate was just over 5.5%. And since then, every time the Feds were meeting, there were talks about reducing the rates, and sometimes they were reduced and sometimes they weren't, but they were not raised from that point until now. So all through 2025, it was pretty steady, and then towards the end of 2025, it started dropping, and then we thought that, or projections were that in 2026, they would continue to be reduced, but here 2026 is, we're in May, there's been no reduction, and now the forecasting and the projections are that there's not going to be any more, basically, no more reductions for 2026 is what the outlook is. Maybe in December there might be, but from now that's what the analysts are saying.
Well, I also heard that they were considering perhaps an increase because of inflation to hold inflation down. So there's been a lot of different predictions, right?
Yeah.
And now that Powell has been replaced as chair, that makes a big difference.
Yeah, and so that's the most favorable thing is what people are saying is no change for the rest of 26.
That's
so no increase.
So you're taking the middle road, eh?
Yeah.
But CFC isn't mirroring that.
And right
trajectory.
Right, and that's a great point, Chad. That basis points, it doesn't go basis point to basis point. It does have some effect on it, but it does not mirror this. So. We have had, you know, when they have gone down, our rates, our quota rates have gone a little bit, but nothing like what they have shown.
Well, so what drives their strategy then? If it isn't the
Well, these are the long term rates, and still there's a lot of uncertainty. There's still just uncertainty about the future. I don't know exactly where, but obviously they have their analysts, but the short-term rates or the existing rates, it takes a long time. Not just CFC, but mortgages too. They don't follow what this is. It takes time for them to make up and make the changes.
We're still at 5.5 at CFC 2 years ago.
Yeah. So there's lots that we're dealing with and trying to work through. So with CFC's interest rates, we're quoted rates, and then they offer discounts. I just wanted to go over some of the discounts because we talked about some of those at the last month during our board meeting. So first off, they offer a performance discount, which is worth 12.5 basis points. So to achieve this or to earn this, we have to have a average too high of the last 3 years in our modified debt service coverage ratio, and we have to meet a 1.35. And all the other discounts are based off of this one. If we don't maintain that or reach that, then we don't get the collateral discount, which is 12.5. That's a 100% borrower is what that discount is. And then the equity discount, that's based off of our asset to equity ratio. We have to meet a 40% ratio. We're at right under 69% currently. But again, we have to meet the performance discount to be able to qualify for that. So those three discounts there. The volume discount, 8.5 basis points, they actually did away with that before I was here. So any of the borrowings that I've done since I've been here, that doesn't include the volume discount. What CFC explained to me is that they said they lowered all the rates across the board. What they offered to include the volume discount is what their reasoning was. But our prior rates continue to have the volume discount. It's just the new ones going forward don't have it. And it was communicated to me also that with the performance or collateral or equity, if any of those are removed, it would be effective just for new loans. It wouldn't, they wouldn't take them away for the prior month.
Volume, does that mean the more you have to be a bigger borrower to get that?
Yeah, yes. So it was.
And they're big enough.
We are. No, we are, but they discontinued that, so they just have it in there. It's not available to new borrowers.
Oh, it's not.
Or new loans.
You had to have at least 15 million.
So it's not, yeah, okay, so it doesn't count at all now.
Yeah, it applies to our prior loans
previous,
that we had.
Previous
that,
loans, but
new
nothing.
Ones. Right. So then the next here, the definitions of the modified debt service coverage ratio. Debt service coverage ratio, there was some discussion about that, Mike, that you brought up last month. Why are we reporting MBSC when what they're really worried about is DSC? So I went back and forth on this to get some answers on why the difference. So, and this is still a little bit confusing to me, or why they say this. So according to the debt, or according to the loan covenants, DSC is the definition of DSC is the same definition as MBSC for the loan covenants. But for the discounts, they're different. MBSC is different than DSC. But if you look up the loan covenants on the, this is page 13, if you look up line, or page 2, and I didn't have it here because I didn't have this information when I uploaded this. But the formula and the definitions for DSC is the formula for MDSC.
In your previous slide, it says they're not using DSC anymore.
Yeah, and that's why I asked them for more clarification on that. So it's just called DSC in the loan covenants, but it's MDSC is what it is.
So years ago, we had to meet a 1.25 for DSC. And a 1.35 average high of 2 of the 3 years of a 1.35 for modified debt service coverage. And the difference is that on modified, you take out any of the patronage capital that you receive from a G&T is the really big ones. And so they have that taken out. And so really what Jonathan just wanted to answer was, you said, the loan covenant says DSC, but you're reporting modified debt service coverage.
Right.
We had to meet modified debt service coverage to get our discounts, and so the prior person who reported the financials did not want to have to go through MDSC and DSC, so she just cut out DSC. But he's put DSC back in, so
just
now you have it, so that you, because...
He's tough for this.
If you want
it
there,
like
continue.
An effort to confuse the customer.
Right.
But in all reality, what debt service coverage is are you bringing in enough revenue to meet your debt service, and you have to have a certain ratio, and we are. We are, and we're receiving the discounts because we are.
So, a lot of undue confusion on our part. Okay, so this, I wanted to show this slide again. So I drew that red line there. That everything, all the loans above that are going to mature in September of 2028. And then our loan, total outstanding loan amounts will be down to around 40 million. But the key part about those up there is that they're mostly principal. And so our debt coverage or a debt service will be drastically reduced after September of 2028. So it'll give us more room to have more loans and still meet the MBSC ratios. So,
well, looking at that chart, the top ones, the old ones, look like we're getting around 0.4 basis points, around that. And the lower one indicates we're getting about the same, so it hasn't changed the discount, right? The discount is about the same for earlier loans at the top of the chart, and it looks like at the bottom of the chart, we're getting about the same discount.
Yes,
okay.
So just the last three were the ones where it lost or dropped the volume.
Yeah, but it looks like we're still getting this.
Not quite as much, we're losing about 7%.
And then over there on the right, we also have listed how long the term for each one of those loans on the right. I did talk to CSC, and they communicated, so the two loans that we did for 30 years, we communicated with them that if it is possible that when those repricings are due, that if we wanted to change those terms down to 25 or 20, that is available. That's an available option. And also with those repricing times, these were out for the first two down there, the last three at the bottom. The first two were for 2 years, and then the next one was for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And when those come due, we have the option to do, we don't necessarily, well, we can pay it off, or we can extend it to mature, or fix it to maturity, or we also have the option to do another 2 year, 3 year, 5 year, whatever, to the length of the loan. There's no limit on the amount of repricing that's available on each one of those loans.
That's a really important change, right? Because we've had it that we had these repricings at the ends of these older loans, and so we could either pay them off or we locked it to term. Now, those interest rates were great, and so that made sense for us. But now, in this rate environment, Jonathan now has the ability that if in 2 years from now the rates are great, we can lock them. But if they're not, he might just say, let's wait 2-3 years and we'll try again. And so we have that, we have flexibility now. We're not locked to that rate for the entire 30 years of the loan, or what I would say 28 years after that first repricing. So that is very, very important when we talk about our debt structuring.
When we get a discount on those earlier loans, if we stop being 100% borrower, would we lose that discount, or is that fixed?
No, we lose it.
Yeah, we would. So all those loans would revert to the original rate if we borrow from somebody else.
Well, we would lose. They apply the discount on each quarter when we receive our invoice for amortization payments. They have those discounts all listed out there. So the 8.5% basis, or the 8.5 basis points, would just be removed, so we wouldn't have that discount anymore. Okay. That's how that would work.
Okay. So thank you.
And then also with the, they communicated this to me too, and this was news that on these repricing dates, if we don't want to take advantage of the 2 year, 3 year, 5 year, and we think that the interest rates are going to drop significantly in 6 months, whatever, we do have also the option. It said that you can do a month-to-month variable rate also. So
if your crystal ball tells you that we're not going to do it this month, but in 2 months we're going to lock that rate, you tell us, Bob, and we'll do variable for 2 months, and then we'll. Okay. But it is an option.
Okay, this is, so we
had a question, one more question on that.
Yeah.
Is there a penalty to pay off those 30-year small loans early?
So when...
Are you talking about loan 3 and 4?
No, I'm talking about 03 and 04.
Yes. Prior to repricing. If at repricing, you have the ability to do that. But if you do before... Yes, and it's significant. It's never penciled out for us to do it.
Yeah, isn't it the remaining amount they would have made on the loan?
Yeah.
The remaining amount of interest they would have made.
We do have the option in 2 years to change that term to 20 or 25. And any time, yeah, that's what was my understanding, is anytime you try to make any changes to these, then you're penalized unless it's during the repricing. So this year, our Form 7 was due to CSC on April 30th, and we submitted this. So on the far right column, this is our 2025 data. So our ratios for our modified debt service coverage for 2025 was 1.61, and our average, two high out of the last 3 years, on the next line is 2.93. So that's the one that our discounts, or is required for our discounts. And then the DSC 1.66, then 2.96. Again, our equity is a percentage of assets. So then on this next slide, I did a few scenarios. So all the 22 to 25 is the same. And so basically I took $20 million if we invested, or if we borrowed $20 million in 2026 from January 1, amortize it for the whole year, 25-year loan, 5.5%. This is how it would affect our ratios for 26, 27, and 28. So if you look at the second line there in 2026,
yeah.
Well, the first line, we'd be down to 1.37, so just above the 1.35. So we take the average, two high averages of the last 3 years, we'd be at 2.31. Then the next year, we'd be at 1.49 for the average, and then the next year, 1.37. And our equity there would continue to, well, drop the first year, and then it would continue to increase equity to asset ratio. So there's a lot of factors that would, I mean, this is a lot of projecting, but I tried to do just a straight 20 million. If we had, and that's for a full year of 2026, if we had, you know, less interest, the interest rate was less or more, obviously that would affect it. We do have the ability to, if we borrow a little bit more, it would change that. And then this is based off of our margins. So if our margins are gonna go up or down from what we projected, then that would affect those. That would affect those.
Why isn't it lowering the ratio to
16? Why isn't it? I'm sorry.
Why isn't that ratio being lower? Because it's really, really high. The equity as a percent of assets.
Uh-huh.
What do we need to change so that that becomes less out of balance?
Well, I think where it should be closer to everybody else is, yeah, well, lower because it's not as high. Well, if we borrow more, then that's going to bring down because every our
well, so weird because we are borrowing.
That's, I mean, the borrowing is going right into our system, so it's increasing our assets. So,
but what you see the difference is, Chad, is that in if you look across in 27 and 28. It's the payoff of those old loans. That's what it is. So when we hit, if we did this to 29, 30, 31, you would see that difference because now, yeah.
Paying more on interest and not on principal.
Yes.
It's a good problem.
Yes.
Yeah. I do have a question on the 100% loan. I think some time ago I asked about, does it count if we issue our own bonds? Because we are, being a state agency, we have the privilege of being able to sell bonds. If we, say, borrow $20 million on bonds, does that affect it? Maybe we haven't talked to them about that.
No, we did do bonds many years ago. I can't recall.
We did
do bonds, yeah. And it did not. We did not lose our 100% borrower as a result
think
of
so,
that.
Because it's not borrowing from a lending agency. Mm-hmm.
What ended up happening is we sold those bonds, and then when Mendes took over as general manager, so we're talking 10, 12 years ago, yeah. We refinanced all of those through CFC. Bonds are extremely cumbersome for the accounting of doing it, and CFC is much easier.
No,
but we would not lose our designation with them. If we borrowed from RUS, we would lose that designation as 100% borrower. Okay. Yes.
By the way, there are companies that will take care of all the bond thing for you, including payment and everything. I mean, they'll issue them for you, advertise them, and they'll actually pay them, but they pay the payments to the bonds.
Yeah, and we did that, but then you have to, it's similar to like what I would say a construction loan. So you then have to prove how much you spent and take a draw on it, and it was quite cumbersome.
Yeah. But the interest rate may save you millions depending on that.
Yeah.
So next year, to bring it back, this is the list of our capital projects, and then on the 2026 column, these are all approved projects, and they were either ongoing before they were approved in 2025 at the end of our, in December, or we had requested an increase in those projects, increased funds. So this list here, the total there for 2026, 18.4 million is what needs to be funded there. Some of that is going to be taken out of our margins, some from borrowing, and then the years going forward, those totals there across the top or across the bottom. But as a reminder, this is the reason why we're doing the borrowings. A lot of these assets are at minimum 20-year assets, 20 years all the way up to, show on the next slide, but some all the way up to 100 years is the useful life of some of these assets. But the large ones there are the transmission lines, the substations, and the substation transformers.
But I still have a problem with the bucket trucks and that in there, because that's not really building our system. That is an equipment for use of every day. And it seems to me that there's a big difference between a capital improvement where you're building something or replacing it, and getting a bucket truck. Yes, it's more expensive than a car, but it is similar to a car.
Right.
And it just seems to me that that ought to be paid for out of our current revenue, because it's just a replacement of a fleet. And yet here we're borrowing money for 30 years to pay for it.
But we're not required to borrow for it. What we use this for is budgeting and planning for our 10-year cycle.
Yes, yeah.
And so because it is meets our $500,000 threshold, we put it on here for our planning. But it doesn't say that we're not going to take a borrow. We're not going to come to you and say we want to borrow $500,000 for a bucket truck. This is our internal plan. And so, Jonathan, this is an easy way for him to show you what are the projects that we are using this for. And the bucket truck is on there for our planning, but it doesn't mean that we're going to borrow that $500,000 for it.
When you do the budget, usually, though, for a year, it shows vehicles.
Yes.
It's not something like this. This is much more intensive, capital intensive. And so it just seems to me that this is way...
So what we do is we require that Kyle does individual vehicles on his own department budget.
Yeah.
But anything that is over $500,000, we put on our 10-year plan for us for cash flow and budget planning. But it doesn't mean that we're borrowing from CFC for that. This is just a part of our overall cash flow plan.
Yeah, but this shows borrowing. It shows we need $18 million.
That's actually not borrowing. That's just... what's needed to fund those. We're not necessarily borrowing those amounts at the bottom.
Okay. I heard you say 20 million you're going to borrow, sort of idea, and there's 18, and that's pretty big. You know, maybe I'm just confused there.
Okay, so I'm sorry, that's a good point. This is the cash that's required for these capital projects, and we don't necessarily have to borrow all of this to meet these. Some we'll use out of our margins. And then as these, and like Melissa said, these were three years out, we put it on there for our cash outlay. This is our required cash outlay for these projects. You all have only approved the 2026 amounts, and then the 27 through 30, that's what I have to plan for the future. We do the capital, the capital, the annual capital projects is most of what the vehicles will mm-hmm. go under.
Yes.
We don't borrow for those. There's another basically $5 million that we invest mm-hmm. in that we don't do.
I'd just rather see it in the annual budget as it comes up, as opposed to this saying capital at the top. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sort of thing.
I got a question. Is this like a forecast? I'm looking at that. I like it. We're finishing up a bunch of big expensive projects. I mean, it's like, again, it's expensive here. are we going to have less expensive years coming forward, or are we going to be adding a bunch of stuff to 27, 28, 29, and they're going to catch up?
Well, as far as my understanding, this right here is what we're, this is what we submitted to CFC for the next 5 years, those totals there. This is the highest year in a while. My understanding is this is where we're, I mean, this is what
things can change,
plan.
But hopefully this is where we're going to be.
Yeah.
This is the plan.
This is the plan, but I'm going to say, Bob, that that is very dynamic. As new customers come in, or as load continues to grow and we evaluate that, then we look at, like Shane showed you the summer loading projections, as we look at that and see that there is an area that is getting harder and harder to serve on the infrastructure that we have, we may then have to replace that. So that's the purpose of this, is for us to look and say, what are we looking at for 10 years? What cash are we going to need, and what infrastructure needs to be added? So my short answer is, we're going to do our best to stick with this, but I'm not committing that we're not going to add to that list. How about that?
We shouldn't be, unless something changes drastically, we won't be borrowing $36 million again next year, $20 million next year.
Okay.
In addition to unless you love
it. That's what I'm planning for. So,
or less. I mean, our customer just went down.
That'll be up next month.
But one of the things that I asked, the reason that I asked Jonathan to go over this with you and to redo this, you've looked at this list many, many times, is not to nitpick the individual items, because we've already gotten approval for that, but it's for you guys to really wrap your head around these large projects that we're working on, and this is what we borrow for, is this kind of infrastructure. And then Jonathan, if you'll talk to them about the infrastructure that we're borrowing, what is the life of that infrastructure?
So, with talking with our managers here, transmission poles, which is a huge cost. Anyway, useful life anywhere, depending on the material, from wood to ductile iron, 40 to 100 years. Our digger derrick and large bucket trucks, they're maintained properly 20 years, and our large transformers, substation transformers, they're maintained properly 50 years. So,
isn't trucks and that based more on mileage and use than years?
Well, years, that's historically how long we've had
but. So yes, in the small vehicles, mileage is a good ratio to go off of, but these trucks are parked, running at high idle, 8 hours on the day. So it's more on the use. It's more on the
hours used. I mean,
hours used.
Hour.
Yes, but then as we've monitored it, and you know, throughout the years, 20 years is a good indication of time. Is what it really comes down to.
So our vehicles that we buy routinely, they are on mileage, and that is one of the reasons why they're on his expense budget, annual capital budget. But these larger ones last for far longer, and they cost much more, so that's why we plan for them for a longer period of time.
It doesn't mean in 20 years I'm replacing that truck. We have a 1997 right now that's still holding strong, giving us enough value to keep it going. But our goal, our philosophy is around a 20 year is what we'd like to be at, or what we shoot for.
And at the beginning, again, we talked about what our, you know, what this strategy is, what we're trying to accomplish, you know, financial stability, reliable infrastructure, and reasonable rates for our customers. And with that, we're trying to pay as little interest as possible. And we also want our customers to pay portions of these assets over, you know, closer to the life of the asset than paying it in 1 year or 10 years. So, did you have a question?
But there's a philosophy here. Something that wears out has been weared out by the current customers, right? And so it should be a replacement of the people who've used it up. And so that should be in the rates. If we're building for new customers, that should definitely be a borrowing, because they need to pay for it. is for the future, right? So the philosophy is, you know, how you divide these items up of what's really replacement of something that I used up, we all used up, and so we should pay for it on the rates. But the new stuff, somebody else should pay for. I'll have to be part of it for a while, but you know, the length of an item should be depending on whether it's new or replacement. Mm-hmm. A reasonable philosophy.
So we, well,
we're talking about strategy.
We pay for everything through our rates. You can tell me to be quiet because I know you know this better than I do. But this is hard for me because
well,
I love this.
You said he was going to do it.
I know, it's so hard. I think that there is, you're right, but the philosophy is that if we have things, we're recovering everything in our rates. And so what we say is, how much in our rates are we recovering for power costs, maintenance, and expenses? And then how much of that is for our debt? And what happens when we take short-term debt is that the current customers pay for a larger portion of that infrastructure than the people who are going to use it for 30 years. And so that's really what Jonathan's trying to speak on here is, how do you find that perfect balance of paying less interest on a shorter term and not have today's customers pay for a larger portion of the asset that's going to last for 50 years?
If you borrow the money, the current customer only pays for his part of the use of that because then he leaves. But if I used up an asset, say a transformer is used up in my, I use it up in my lifetime here. Shouldn't that be included in my rate that I paid for 20 years? And then if you want to put in a new transformer, a replacement, that's going to be for the next 20-year person. Shouldn't they pay for that? And that means that their rate would go up, but then mine, I've paid my part.
I don't know where you draw that, how you can separate those, because essentially that's what, that's how it's worked. That's how it's working. There are assets also that we're paying with the rates in the year that we're doing it, with the margins. We're paying our system improvements that's not on this capital project. So that's what we're doing around $4 to $5 million a year that we're doing, that current customers are paying for those assets. And those aren't just 1 year assets either. Those are depending on the asset.
Hopefully we're paying for it with a new rate that we implemented.
As I look at classes and stuff, I felt like, so we're not dealing with all the co-ops. Mm-hmm. I think we get benefit from that, which is good, but we don't follow some of the rules. And some of this stuff, margins, like if the co-ops had all these margins, they have to pay them out. Mm-hmm. And we don't.
So here's how you differentiate that. For a co-op, excess margins are returned in capital credits to their member owners.
Right.
For a power district, as a not-for-profit, our margins are returned into infrastructure in our system. So all of the dollars that we receive go back into infrastructure. We're not, of course there's a small amount of overhead for staff and equipment, but all of the margins that we make, we pay into the infrastructure to maintain our system.
I think my point about just, I feel like we're influencing some of our thinking by the co-ops, because their rules are a little bit different. And like this, particularly this point of who pays for what. And I feel like we have a little bit more leeway. If we're healthy, we can stay healthy by being progressive, pay-as-you-go. Like, if we're paying a bunch of interest on debt, we're going to get less done. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have to pay that, like, I don't feel like I want to look for ways to get debt so I can pay more interest if I don't have to. It's like some of these ratios, we're ahead of the game. Like, great. I don't want to get behind and to hit their ratios. We don't have to. I think that's kind of my point.
The big debate is do we raise our rate or
per any given day. Mm-hmm. And so that's why that loan ratio is so high, is because we keep using margin to pay for things instead of debt, because we're all debt averse, but we're causing the current customer to pay more because of that strategy.
I can totally see, look at that two or three pages ago, 2026 is expensive. We need to borrow money.
Janet.
Hopefully that doesn't happen in the future, for me hopefully.
What we see too, Bob, is it's so cyclical, right? If you think back to like when Mendes took over as general manager, we had a large amount of distribution substations that needed to be put in to meet the load growth in those areas. We built Payne, we built substations in Mesquite, and then it's like you get your handle, your arms around everything with distribution, and then we look and say, we need more transmission because now we've outgrown the, so now we're in a transmission cycle. Eventually we're going to go back into a distribution cycle. It depends on growth. It's all managed by the growth of our area. So that's why I say I'm not going to promise you that I'm not going to add to that, but we're not just randomly coming up with jobs, or I'm not just like, Shane, you seem bored, how about we build a substation? We only build it upon need.
I agree with
that. As you look out though, in 10 years, some of this growth may not occur. So we won't need those projects?
These projects we will, but we may not need ones in the future. It totally depends.
I thought they were planned for the future. I mean, well, some of the projects are for the future.
Yeah, past the 2029 was the last year, I think.
In the near future.
In the near future, past 2030.
Okay.
Like if the growth slows down. Then
summer future for redundancy, too.
Of course, the good hope is the number 24, is it, that will be paid for by the federal government?
Yeah, get more grants and borrow less money.
That's right.
Okay, go through your...
Yeah, let's get to the juice.
Yeah.
Well...
Agreed.
So, basically, our rates are set to recover assets in a 25 to 30-year period. Our cash flow doesn't allow, as we said, to recover these assets in 1 to 10 years, and also we haven't budgeted for those amounts there. This right here, I just wanted to show, and kind of closing it up, just one more slide after this. This is just a scenario. This is what I come up against every time I do a borrowing. They quote me 2 year, 3 year, 5 year, whatever it is I ask them, and then, so if you see there, the shorter the period, the lower the interest rate. So the longer the period, interest rate increases, I can fix those to term. And those are the most right now. It's the rate environment that we're in. Those are the highest interest rates. And so the top table there shows you the difference in the, if you see the annual payments, the difference in those, and then the total interest paid throughout those loans. I just kept those a total interest paid, like that 2 year repricing for the first one. We had 5.51%, and that I just assumed that if we were able to finance that to term for the whole year, that's what it's showing there. And then down at the bottom, I just took the 3 year repricing one. These were quoted to me on May 5th, so 5.54%. I didn't figure in any of our discounts. I just figured this is a good number. So the same rate for 20, 25, 30 years. Annual payment, that's what the annual payment requirements would be, and then the total interest paid over the life of those loans. So if we're looking at, this is for $10 million. When I'm doing the loans, I've been approved to borrow the $9 million and $9 million. We did $5 million. At this point, we were already planning on borrowing $18 million, but we've only borrowed $8 million between when we started recently. And so during that, if you all approved $18 million, I didn't want to borrow the $18 million right off. We could have done that, and we could have loaned it into one of these 30-year fixed maturity, been done, not have to worry about anything, not even think about it. We're going to be paying a lot of interest if we did that, and we're going to be paying on interest before we're even using before these payments on these projects are even done. So that's why we're trying to delay the borrowings as long as possible. And that's why you're seeing the $3 and $2 million ones. Essentially, they are paying for, you know, the substation, the Mesquite sub, Mesquite/Arrowhead sub for $10 million, but we're just not borrowing it all at one time. And so these small incremental amounts in our budget and through our forecasting, we're planning on those being from 20 to 25 to 30 year loans. I like the ability to, or the flexibility to have these 20, 25, or 30 years. Historically, we've done 20 to 25. I did those ones for 30 years because that's what I plan on for our forecasting. But I believe that our cash should and our margin should allow us to change those to a 25-year loan. I'm hoping to be able to do the majority of our ones going for 20 to 25 rather than 25 to 30.
So on the bottom chart there, the total interest paid is if we had held it for the 20 years.
Okay. Right.
So that'd be $6 million, and then if we go for longer, we have to pay $10 million.
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good exercise.
So 10 years, say before $4 million. And the difference, if you look, $830,000 in the annual payment, that would be our debt service for $10 million. $685,000, that's about $150,000. Well, if we were only borrowing $10 million, then we are like, you say, well, we could afford that in our margins to reduce our margins that much. But then if you look at, well, we're going to borrow, you know, 10 this year, 10 that last year, we already had 10. If that gets up to 30 over the, you know, 5-year period, you're looking at $500,000. And so it starts to be more substantial. But still, it's something that we can look at and see to say, well, do we want to reduce our margins in an effort to avoid paying $4 million additional interest on each one of these $10 million?
Like you can't be good.
Yeah. And then this last slide, this is just showing where our cash, again, this is just a forecast. These amounts are the green debt service. You look in 2025, that's what we borrowed, $5 million. And then this is what we did, what we came up with in December. So $17 million, 5.6, 2.1, 5.8 across the board there. If you total all those up, it's $25 million from 26 to 29. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we've only borrowed eight so far.
What did you say? How much?
So if you total the 26 through 2029, $25 million of the new borrowing, $25 million of the 36. Because we already borrowed, or well, we already had the $9 million approved. Okay, $25 million total of the. We'll need to seek approval for additional $25 million. I guess is what I'm trying to say. Of the $17 million this year, we already have been approved to do $10 million, so it'll be $7 million in 26, and then 5.2 and 5.20, it's 29. So we would need to seek approval for $25 million during that time period. Randall reported that we have through 29, yeah, at the end of 29. So Randall reported that it was under budget on two of the projects quite significantly, which means, I don't know, future projects are gonna be over or under.
Keep it up.
And
better.
And so we just haven't. And these projects, some of them are late, like a couple months here. We're anticipating them. Having some of those completed, so it's not that we're not gonna need to borrow some, but a lot of these were delayed, so partially we're under budget, partially some of these are delayed, so that's where we're only at, where we've only borrowed $8 million as opposed to borrowing $18 million at this point. So that's all I have. Unless we have any other comments or questions?
I would say that that's a pretty darn comprehensive evaluation you guys are going through.
I would say that when you go by Jonathan's office and he has three monitors up and his nose is this close to the screen, this is an insight to the way his brain works and what he does all day, every day. And I think that we put this for discussion only because I want you guys to really feel comfortable that Jonathan is analyzing every aspect of this. And like he said, it would have been far easier for him to say in January, can I just borrow $18 million, lock it to term, and call it done? But that's not the way he works. If you see our cash balances are decreasing because he doesn't want to pay the interest. He's working very hard to optimize our money and to make very smart decisions on our debt structuring. And so I say, first off, kudos to Jonathan, but I wanted to give him the opportunity to make you guys feel comfortable that this is exactly what's happening inside that office. He's taking this very, very seriously. And there is something to be said for the life of the loan. I think that it's so key that we can reprice, that if we look in 2 years from now and one of those loans is up, that we do. If we say, okay, some of those projects didn't come to fruition, we're not going to need to borrow it. Let's take $1.3 million and pay it off. If we have high amounts and the interest rate is low, let's lock some of those. Let's give us 10 years instead of 2 years. That repricing ability to continue to reprice is going to be key in our debt structuring. But I still think that our loans should be for 20, 25, and 30 years. I do not think that we should be looking at 10-year loans on 50-year assets. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah, and some of those, if it comes down to it and we're some of these projects that we've started and we don't, I mean, the equity to asset ratio, we've got plenty of room there to borrow more. But our modified debt service coverage ratio, that's basically driving what we're going to be able to borrow. So if we start borrowing more, then we're going to drop below that and then we're going to lose all these discounts.
We have to raise rates.
Correct.
We have to raise
to meet the debt service coverage. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have to adjust rates when we get a new contract, anyway. The power contract, huh?
It's going to get hotter.
Yeah, it could be.
Have you been saying your prayers, Jeff?
We've got to readjust them. Let's put it that way. So we've got to figure out what we're going to do with that. But that, no, it really looks like a great job to me, man. I have that job.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Item J.
I'm going to burn through this one, man.
Oh, yeah,
where are we at?
Yeah.
507. This is going to be quick, Mr. Chair. You don't believe me, but trust me.
Yeah, I don't believe you either.
Shut up, man. Cover your ears, Mr. Daly. You shouldn't be privy to how what really works in here quite yet.
Can you finish now?
Yes. We went to... Can you bring up my... Do you not have my legislative?
Oh, dang it.
Can you just summarize it? Yeah. Okay, we've seen the list. That's it.
Oh, gotcha.
The travel outline? No. Outline law?
May?
No. Board meeting? Agenda items? Sorry, this is my bad, right there.
This one?
Yep. I apologize. I'm
ready
to go.
Okay.
Okay, I went to the legislative conference held by NRECA back in D.C. That was April 26th through 28th. There were 1,500 cooperative leaders in attendance. Jim Matheson, who is the CEO of NRECA, said in his opening remarks that our industry on the Hill is viewed as truth tellers by all policymakers, giving them a unique advantage as they advocate for top co-op priorities. The key, he said, is that co-ops deliver a consistent message about the need for reliable, affordable power, no matter which political party is in control of Congress or the White House. And I think that that's really important for us. And we at OPD5 try to ride that balance federal, state, and local level. Policymakers know that we are not of Washington. We're laser focused on doing the right things for the communities we serve, and that's a powerful differentiator. The conference focused on streamlining federal permitting, mitigating wildfire risk, expediting disaster relief from FEMA, and increasing funding for RUS electric loans. This was a luncheon that we went to at Capital Burger that was all representatives from NREA, and then NRECA sent lobbyists to come and meet with us too, to just give us advice on our discussions on the Hill, and it's always a good meeting, and we're thankful that we have that relationship with NRECA, that they're willing to send the lobbyists with us.
So in that group there, are the majority of them using RUS loans in lieu of CLC loans or not?
The majority of them, well, there's three, CoBank, CFC, and RUS, and I believe that only one of them is an RUS borrower.
Oh, really?
The rest are CoBank or CFC. And some are both. So we heard from Bruce Westerman, who is the chair of the House Natural Resources, and he spoke to us on permitting reform. He said that it is necessary so that we can grow and provide more energy. He was instrumental in both the SPEED and the Fix Our Forest Act. So I enjoyed listening to him. We also heard from Jeff Hurd from Colorado. He's a new legislator. He said the best way for co-ops to persuade lawmakers to support their priorities is to focus on the realities of how federal policies are affecting them. Tell them, here's my project, here's the delay, here's what it's costing us, and here's how to fix it. I thought that was funny, that, you know, we should give them on a silver platter what they need to do to fix it, and that they would listen, but that was kind of him to tell us that. We heard from Julie Federcheck. She is a former PUC chair in, I believe it was North Dakota, and her take that I took from what she said was that the US of A has the ability to generate enough power to meet our needs, and that we just need to ensure that whoever needs the power has to pay for it. That's easier said than done, but she felt very strongly that we as a country have the ability to generate all of the energy that we need for all future growth. We also heard from Jim Matheson, Louis Finkel, who is the head of their lobbying, Mike Parton, who is their board chair, and then Hill Thomas, who is also one of their lobbyists. Tuesday we spent on the Hill as a group. We had a very good representation from NREA. Lisa was being induced to have her baby on that day, yet still texting us while we were on the Hill. And so we had our lobbyist, Jesse Wadhams, joined us in that group. You can see Jesse on the far left, and I was thankful for his representation. One of the things that Lisa did this year that I thought was far improved in the way that we have done it in the past is that she gave every one of the CEOs a topic that we spoke with and spoke on in every meeting. And so then it's very easy to go around the room and remember what you've already talked about, because you say the same thing over and over throughout the day. We had it down to a science. This was incredibly productive meetings. So we met with Senator Catherine Cortez Masto and her staff. We met with Jackie Rosen's staff, Susie Lee's staff. We did meet with Dina Titus and her staff, and then Stephen Horsford's staff and Mark Amadeus. This is a picture with Congressman Horsford's staff, Ian, and he was very, I will say, guarded when we went there. He was, I think, didn't seem, I don't want to say unfriendly, but a little bit cold. And so as we were waiting, they were bringing in chairs. I said, can I tell you a good story about Congressman Horsford? And he said, well, sure. And so I told him about our permitting issues, and that we wrote a letter, like my grandma would say, you got to write a letter to your congressman. And we did, and we got our permit, thanks to him. And everyone said, did you see the change in that guy from you telling that story? Then he was wonderful. We had a very good meeting with him. The congressman has had a staffing change, and there is a new gal that is in charge of his energy policy, and she was starting the next day. So he said, will you give her 2 weeks and then reach out to her? I gave her 13 days, and then we sent her an email to introduce ourselves to her. So we're staying in very close contact with Congressman Horsford's office. For our group, our talking points were that our public power model and how that works. We spoke to them on our IIJA grant, affordability, the Help Hoover Dam Act and the Colorado River drought, wildfire risk and liability, broadband, and permitting reform. I think that these are incredibly long days. You do a lot of walking, standing, rushing, and then waiting, but very, very good. I think it's important. One thing that we did not have on our list to talk about but was asked by every single legislator was data centers. That was a hot topic that every one of them wanted to speak with us on. And so we did have some good conversations about that. One of the key points that I tried to make was when Dane from Lincoln County was in charge of the Help Hoover Dam Act and the Colorado River, and then I always talked on the cold showers for the bass. And so that was very good for us when we met with Cortez Masto and her staff. One of her staff members, Sean, said, we are, have a meeting with the Secretary of Interior Burgum is coming to the office. Do you have anything? And I said, yes, let's talk to him about the Bureau of Reclamation's decisions to still send water through the bypass in order to give bass a cold shower when we are in desperate need of hydropower and we are making a decision to put fish above people. And so he stopped me and said, would you give me some things in writing so that when we meet with him later this week, we can talk to him. It was very gratuitous that CRETA actually wrote a letter to Secretary Burgum. And so I forwarded, and I got that in my email that day. I forwarded that to the Congresswoman's staff, and I got a thank you after her meeting, and that was shared with him on our behalf. So I think that those meetings are very important, and Catherine Cortez Masto continues to be a person who reaches out to us or her staff for those kinds of conversations and information. So I think it was very, very good. I'm glad that we only go to D.C. once, maybe twice a year, because it is a bit of a grind to go there. But I think it's very, very important. And we're building a rapport. When we went to Jackie Rosen's office, McKenna, her chief of staff, said started asking questions. And then Robbie from Valley said, do you want to go around and do introductions first? And she goes, oh, do you guys feel like you need? And I said, do you remember us? And she said, I remember you. It pays to be the lone female in the group. I guarantee you she couldn't remember my name, but she knew exactly who I was. And I'm like, okay, touche. So I think that we have staff members that are recognizing us. When we went to Susie Lee's office, same thing. He recognized us. We've met with him multiple times. And then, of course, Catherine Cortez Masto. Ian from the congressman's office, I've not met with him before, but he will not be our key contact. It will be his energy policy gal. And so we will work to build that relationship. Vernon is already building a relationship with other employees in Senator Cortez Masto's office, working on appropriations for some of our projects. And so I think we're doing a very, very good job federally. And that concludes my presentation, Mr. Chair.
Well, I retract whatever I said.
You are forgiven. How about that?
Oh, well, very good. Any public comments at this time?
Yes, Gary did have to leave early, but he did ask me to make a comment for him. The NETSOL alerts currently send emergency notifications for the city of Mesquite. Gary did mention the possibility of maybe adding OPD5 to those alerts when there's a power outage. I did mention that we do currently send text messages out there when there is an outage, but he did ask if we could call him regarding this.
We will reach out to Gary and let him know that we've been a part of Nixle for many years.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you. Any trustee comments?
Yeah, I would like to say that staff is doing an outstanding job. It's incredible. I've been here a long time, and we're a little guy, but we're playing in the big game. We're doing a heck of a good job. I mean, you guys should be very proud.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. All right, how about M, approval of our next board meeting on June 17th in the Overton Boardroom?
Overton?
Yeah, that's what it says.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's to keep
that correct.
You guys approved that schedule in December.
I approve. I make a motion that we approve.
Oh, that a boy.
I'll second it.
Hey, we have a motion and a second. Everybody in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nay.
We've got to do that so we end up in Mesquite in December.
Oh, okay. I got fourth then. Okay. How about a motion to end the session? No executive session?
No, we do have executive session.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
Okay, we do it then?
We make a motion.
We do it at the end.
We do it at the end, yeah. Do it now?
So let's do a motion to go into executive session.
I move we go into executive session after taking a 5-minute break. After making a 5-minute break.
Oh, sorry about that.
Okay. Everybody here say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Who was the second? Is that Bob?
Bob.
Thank you. Hey, I changed my
mind. Thank you, Karina.
I need you, though.
Thank you.
You have, what time do you have to be out?